Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of El Paso Primetime. I'm Dennis Ruth, sitting in for the rest of the band. It seems that they're all working on projects for 2013. Of course, we're talking about Cheryl Gehring, Florence Schwein, and Louis Sainz. Joining me this afternoon on El Paso Primetime is Erin Pavolko, and she's with the National Alliance on Mental Illness here in El Paso. First off, Erin, welcome to El Paso Primetime.
Thank you so much for having me.
I think it's important to talk about mental illness, or sometimes known as mental challenges, because as people are, they consider mental illness as crazy. It's and especially at this time of year, it hits them right between the eyes.
Absolutely.
Your brain is an organ, quite frankly. It's just like your liver, your spleen, your skin, your eyes, anything. I mean, really and truly, something could go wrong with it at any time.
Yes. And many people do think that it is different than the rest of the body. It's treated differently in society. When you go to the doctor and you have an ailment that someone can see and physically see on a screen and see in an x-ray, it's treated so differently than a brain disorder when they really are the same thing. People with cancer get treated the same way that people with mental illness get treated. Everyone needs treatments and cures and things to help them in everyday life.
I suppose the major fear about mental illness is we're taught from early on that we're supposed to be level-headed.
Yes.
You know, straight-edge thinking. You were supposed to be level-headed and grounded, and we're supposed to be able to rationalize things on a proper level. And when those synapses in the brain aren't happening, all of a sudden people start getting a little wary about things. And quite frankly, the stigma begins at that level.
Exactly. A lot of times it's dealing with the stigma. It's hiding it from the family, hiding it from friends, because you don't want to seem like the family that has someone, quote, crazy in their family. And that's what society has taught us, that if it's crazy, let's just push it to the side and cover it up. When really, those people are suffering each and every single day with what their thought process is, how to get up in the morning, how to take a shower. These things are hard things for these people that are suffering. So what they need is sympathy, support, help, and help from society to treat them in a better way.
And nowadays, you're seeing multimedia efforts to try to illuminate the issue of dealing with mental illness on a proactive way. Even series producers, much like the people in Mad Men, who go back into the 60s and early 70s and try to tackle what mental illness was and how it was dealt with back in that time. They're trying to illuminate it so that we see it and we're able to deal with it in our time period in a proactive way.
Absolutely. And we've come a long way since then, thank goodness. But the stigma, I think, still prohibits people from going to get the help that they need because they feel that they will be judged, they will be stigmatized, people will look at them differently, and they will treat them differently, which in today's world, that is correct. Now, when mental illness first comes about, many people don't think it's going to be mental illness. They go through the list of other things that it could possibly be. It could be drug problems. It could be peer pressure. It could be a million other things. But people don't automatically jump to assume it's a mental illness because it's something that's not talked about. It's something so taboo that no one wants to discuss. But once someone is diagnosed, once someone gets the help that they need, you don't see as many bizarre behaviors anymore. Things can get under control. These people can really lead a healthy, happy life, but getting them the help they need is just so important.
Thanks to your advocacy. Thanks to the National Alliance on Mental Illness. Thanks to folks like you. It's time now to start breaking the taboo of talking about mental illness. It's no longer a stigma. It is what it is. It's a mental illness. And it's time to help people get back into the swing of things.
Absolutely.
I mean, really and truly, would you treat a person who has cancer the same way as we treat people who have some form of mental illness? Of course not.
Right.
Would you treat somebody who has a broken leg, a broken arm, or some kind of a boo-boo on their body, would you treat them the same way? No, I don't think so. So that's where we need to start breaking all of these stigmas. We need to be proactive of what we do.
Absolutely. I totally agree. And that's what I work for the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and that's kind of our job, is we go out there and we educate not only people that have mental illnesses, but their family members as well. Speaking from personal experience, I have a family member with schizophrenia. When this came about, we had not had any experience with this in our family previously, and we were lost. We were completely confused. We didn't know where to go. When you have a diagnosis of cancer or diabetes, you know what doctor to go to. You have a specialist that you automatically think, this is what I'm going to do to get help. But when you have someone diagnosed with schizophrenia, it's a completely different story. You don't know where to start. The National Alliance on Mental Illness helps everyone get to where they need to be as far as treatment. They help educate family members and educate society and try to fight the stigma so that people can really get the help that they need and branch out and say, hey, I do have a mental illness and it's a brain disorder. It's not something I picked. It's not something I chose. It's something that I'm dealing with and I need help with.
It comes to mind that elementary psychology classes teach the basics, you know, psychoses and neuroses and all of the associated things with mental disorders. But one of the things that I'm thinking about right now is that this society in general has a propensity for labeling things immediately and labeling them badly.
Yes.
I mean, for instance, the generalized term for schizophrenia, and nowadays we seem to be confusing that by calling it bipolar.
Yes, right. And a lot of times people don't know the difference between the two. And the term bipolar is thrown around a lot. It's used as a term, oh, that person must be bipolar just because they changed their mind, when that's not really the case. Bipolar disorder is a brain disorder that people can go through different stages of mania. Mania is either extreme highs or extreme lows. Schizophrenia, you have a lot of We hear it all the time in media of hearing the voices, and that is really what's happening, is people are hallucinating, people see things that aren't there, people are hearing voices that don't belong to them or do belong to them. But those two are our biggest mental illnesses that are affecting our area the most. But in common with all of the mental illnesses is depression, which again, people think, oh, well, you're just sad. Just snap out of it. Just get something to make you feel better, when that's not the case. Depression is a very serious mental illness that affects many, many people in the United States and the world. But tackling all these things simultaneously is the hard part. If you're schizophrenic and you have depression as well, you've got a dual diagnosis going on. On top of that, we have a lot of people with mental illnesses that start coping with drugs and alcohol. So now we have a whole nother layer of things that needs to be taken care of. But again, knowing what the person is diagnosed with is the first step to actually getting the person help, but getting them the help that they need, and not a label that's either misdiagnosed, or, you know, a therapist or a psychiatrist or a psychologist might see them for 10 minutes and say, oh, here's your label. And that's really not the case. You know, that's the hard part.
The holidays are here and people have a tendency to confuse depression with the high stress that comes with the holidays, having to get the house ready, got to buy the presents, got to do this, you know, the in-laws are coming, that sort of a thing.
Right.
Well, quite frankly, you may not suffer from depression. It's just that average stress that's added on to the holidays.
Exactly. And there is a difference. Clinical depression is you are in a state of sadness that you cannot get out of, and it's for an extended period of time. We're talking months, you know, that you don't want to get up in the morning. You can't go and talk to people you usually talk to. The everyday parts of life are very hard to do. There are people with depression that have catatonic states where they can't move. They physically can't move because of the depression taking over. And again, the label of depression is so overused that sometimes people don't take it as seriously as they should, when depression is a very, very serious illness.
So for the person who has chronic depression, two of the worst things are to be told, number one, just snap out of it, like you said.
Yes.
And number two, oh, you know what? You really need to take your meds.
Yes.
And so you got pressure on both sides of this whole thing.
Absolutely. And treatment is really a mix of medication, if that's the route people like to take, therapy sessions, counseling, support groups. It's really a cocktail of those things. If you only medicate and that is it, your only answer to your illness is medication, you're really not going to get as far as you could as if you were talking with people that also have depression, or talking with a therapist that could discuss what coping skills you can use to be kind of happier during the day, making it through those basic life skills that you're really having trouble with. Medication, again, is another issue with mental illness, because a lot of people with mental illnesses have a condition of the brain where they don't believe they need to take their medicine, they don't believe they're sick, or when they start taking their medicine, they feel better and they stop taking their medicine because they want to feel at that state of feeling better without medicine. And I can't blame them. It's hard to be on medicine for a long time. But knowing that that balance is happening, knowing you can take medication and stay on it and stay at a balanced life, it's just so important. And getting our loved ones to the point that they know what's best for them, you know, seeing a therapist and talking about different kinds of medication. Again, medication takes weeks to kick in. So taking it for 2 days and you don't feel better, well, you got to encourage the person to keep taking it. So all of these things, it's just so important to do many different ways of therapy to really get the person to where they need to be.
And sometimes that therapy can take months.
Absolutely.
I can tell you from personal experience, too. I have to fess up here to you and to the listening audience, but I was diagnosed with clinical depression back in 1989.
Mm-hmm.
And it took forever to put me back on track.
Absolutely. And people that get diagnosed or don't have a diagnosis, it's hard to cope with that. It's hard to hear that you have something that is, you know, a mental illness that has the stigma involved in it. It's going to be a long-term fight for anyone. That's very hard to hear. There are a lot of people, the member of my family who's ill has not come to terms with the fact that they have schizophrenia. I don't think it would, myself, I don't think I could cope with that. I couldn't walk around and tell people, hey, I hear voices all the time. You know, that's absolutely extremely difficult, especially when society looks at it the way it does. So keep fighting the fight because you're doing a great job, and encourage those people and listeners everywhere to get the support that they need. And again, the National Alliance on Mental Illness is here to help.
If you're just tuning in to El Paso Primetime, we're talking to Erin Pavolko. She's an advocate with NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness here in El Paso. And Erin, let's go ahead and talk about the free services that are provided by the National Alliance on Mental Illness.
Absolutely. The National Alliance on Mental Illness is a nonprofit grassroots company. Our biggest job in El Paso, and really nationally, we have a national branch as well, is education and advocacy. So making sure people know what mental illness is and how to fight for themselves and fight for their family. What we offer here in El Paso, the El Paso affiliate, has a family-to-family class. Family-to-family is a class taught by family members that have been trained by NAMI to know every piece of mental illness, whether it's how the behavior should be that you're seeing out of your loved one, what kind of medications, what you can say to the doctor, what the doctor can and can't say to you, which is also very frustrating. All of those things are covered in the family-to-family class. It lasts 12 weeks, and it's a three-hour class on Saturdays. It sounds like a lot, but again, speaking from personal experience, it's the best thing I did for my loved one without them even knowing that I did it, because I know now that when they don't get up and take out the trash, I don't get angry about it. I'm sympathetic. I know that that's not an easy thing to do for them anymore. So again, family to family is a wonderful education class we offer. We also offer support groups that happen every Monday night at the University Behavioral Health Center, UBH, from 7 to 9 p.m. And again, I go every Monday. It's all family members. And right next door in the same building, we have a peer-to-peer support group, which is people that have been diagnosed with mental illnesses, so that we are meeting in our own entity so that you can say what you need to without a loved one feeling hurt if they're in the building as well. But again, those support groups are just so important because you can go and talk to people that live in El Paso that have been dealing with mental illness in El Paso, have been dealing with doctors, have been dealing with, you know, medical care, and the great medical care that we can offer here in El Paso, and get help in that direction as well.
It's important for people to understand that NAMI offers all of these services for free. And also it's important to understand that now in the 21st century, we need to break those stigmas. It's nothing nasty. It's not taboo. Mental illness is what it is. It's an illness. That's the bottom line.
Absolutely. I completely agree. Yes.
There are senior citizens in every family who may be developing some form of schizophrenia. And for the children, for the family members, sometimes getting that help is really tough.
Absolutely. And dealing with the subject of getting older as well is difficult because sometimes you don't know where to draw the line. You know, you have other diseases that could come into play, like Alzheimer's and things that, you know, these people deserve to get help for. So then the question becomes, well, you know, they are elderly. Is a nursing home the place to go, or is it, should we take them to the hospital? That's really all up to the people that are involved and calling for help. Again, at the NAMI office, which is at the Psychiatric Center on Alameda, we have a community resource packet of information that's really, we've combined everything that's we have found in El Paso to be a help for anyone that's dealing with mental illness, whether it be shelters, whether it be counseling, whether it be housing, anything that you could think of that you would need if you were having someone in your family that's mentally ill, elderly or not elderly, is there. So we would love to help anyone that would need it.
There was a point in psychiatric treatments not too long ago where electroshock therapy seemed to be the only method in order to try to take care of some disorders like schizophrenia, some psychoses, maybe clinical depression, OCD, things along that line.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
There was even an episode not too long ago, season 5 in Mad Men, where one of the characters in the show, his wife, had chronic depression, and she would handle it by simply saying, well, honey, I'm kind of blue today.
Oh.
And so honey would put his wife in a psychiatric hospital in upstate New York, and they would give her electroshock therapy, erase her brain, and then off
right,
we went.
Right. And we do have people here that still get electroshock therapy, but again, it's not what society thinks it is. It's not what the media portrays it as, you know, that your temples are on fire because you're burning the person's head, you know, that kind of thing. But again, I think what's great about the mental health field right now is that it's really evolving. It's really talking about the genetics involved. It's talking about drugs and alcohol and whether that would trigger a mental illness. It's talking about what we could do even to prevent it. We're very far away from that. But the fact that we're even discussing that and discussing the possible treatments that could work, everything is really on the table. It's what could we do? What could we try? What medicines would work? What medicines do not work? It's all being heavily researched right now, which is really exciting. We're in an exciting time for mental illness.
Yeah, and even one of the studies, one of the new studies that are out there even points to a new macrobiotic type of diet that actually helps the chemical imbalance in a brain resets it, so to speak.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we've seen so much research on that recently of, you know, you talk about autism as well and gluten-free, and we hear all of those things, but that's very, very important as to what you're putting in your body that will supplement what other things you're doing for yourself, whether it be, you know, home remedies, whether it be natural remedies, whether it be medication you get prescribed. All of these things really do make a difference.
You know, Erin, I used to think for the longest time, actually, that the stigma of mental illness was purely a cultural thing, especially here on the border. You know, it's a Hispanic thing to say, you got to snap out of it. It doesn't exist in our family.
Absolutely.
But the more that I traveled around the country, the more that I met people, I found out that it was more of a universal thing.
Right.
And now I think it's time that we start changing the whole concept, the notion, mental illness is not a bad thing.
Absolutely. And again, getting a diagnosis, getting the person to come to terms with what they need to do to make themselves feel better, I think is the most important step, and it is the hardest step. As far as our family goes, we do want to tell people about mental illness because we want to change the stigma. We want to fight it. We want to make sure people know that the member of our family is so important to us and that they deserve the love and respect that everyone else deserves. The hard part is that this family member doesn't accept schizophrenia yet. So telling people that they are schizophrenic, that's really, you know, it's not good for him because we are advertising something that he doesn't want everyone to know. So that's the hard part. It's the balance of fighting the stigma, really supporting everything that we can, but not shouting it from the rooftops until he's ready. So
from the time of the Civil War through World War I, World War II, the Korean conflict, the Vietnam conflict, and even the Gulf War I, there was a thing called battle fatigue. Now we know it as post-traumatic stress disorder or PTSD, and it's quite a complex thing, and yet the media seems to treat it as though it's nothing more than a catchphrase.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And my husband's in the military, and when he was deployed and came home, I was very concerned about this. But again, with PTSD, it can hit the week they get home from a deployment. It can hit 5 months after deployment. It doesn't have to be a deployment. It could be a huge event in someone's life can create PTSD. The scary thing is that for a long time, the military thought, oh, we have to be strong. And if you're strong, then you are not going to tell anyone that you're suffering, that you have PTSD. The wonderful thing with the president and coming to Fort Bliss recently and the way the military is going now, especially in Fort Bliss, they've done a great job at making sure soldiers know that the strong way is to speak up and be heard and to say, I need help. I'm suffering. This is what I'm going through. And our area is doing a great job in supporting those people.
You know, Aaron, I had high school friends who went to Vietnam. When they came back, some of them came back anyway, and they had quote-unquote battle fatigue, and the VA kept telling them, you just got to get back into the swing of life and you'll be okay. It's just battle fatigue. And then some of them dealt with drug addiction, alcohol abuse, and some even took the ultimate way out just to not have to deal with PTSD. So it's a good thing now that the government has recognized that PTSD is a real problem that can be dealt with as long as somebody opens up and says, hey, listen, I got a problem.
Absolutely. And the military is taking steps before and after deployments, before and after big events that they, go and do to make sure that the soldiers are prepared, that everyone's prepared, that everyone knows what signs to look for. No matter what your rank is, you can be able to assess and say, this person needs help and here's how I can go and help them.
Studies are beginning to show that any kind of head injury,
yes,
brain trauma, will trigger some kind of a mental illness.
Absolutely. And such a scary thought is that something that you do, for instance, the biggest one that has been in the media recently is football. Getting multiple hits to the head can cause some serious brain damage. And again, it's all neurological. It's all a proven fact that if part of your brain is dying or part of your brain has trauma to it, then it leads to mental illness. It leads to all these other things that really could affect the rest of your life. We've seen Junior Seau, goes through depression after years and years of football, commit suicide. Most recently, the Kansas City player. Now, again, we don't know details into that as well, but just the fact that a sport or something that we love as Americans can cause something like that is a really scary thought. So the steps that they're taking as far as helmets, as far as protection, as far as making people aware that this is something that's very serious that could last for a very long time, and we're seeing the effects in older football players and older athletes, it's just so important to get the awareness out.
I had a conversation with a buddy of mine yesterday, and we were talking about this very same thing about head injuries in football.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that was brought out was that rugby players over a long period of time, the same study that studied American football in a longitudinal way, showed that rugby players hardly had any type of head trauma or concussion versus an American football player.
Absolutely. And you see now that when the football players are taken out, there's concussion tests. We didn't see that before for a long time. And now being able to see that they are taking it seriously, it's very good. I mean, that's such an important thing. There's been movies that have come out, documentaries about the steps people are taking now with athletes to make sure that they are protected no matter what sport they're playing.
And that brings it right into the lap of the parent or the grandparent whose kids or grandchildren are playing in Pop Warner football.
Absolutely.
You want to make sure that your kids are going to be fine and dandy. And so you need to teach these kids how to tackle, how to hit without using a headbutt, without doing a chop block, without doing all of that. Even the NFL has gotten involved with it, with their Play 60 program, teaching kids how to do that sort of a thing.
And the fact that the NFL is taking steps now to fine players when they do intentionally have helmet-to-helmet hits, I just think is wonderful. I mean, that's something that would really reinforce to the players, I would hope, that this is not just a thing we're playing around with anymore. This is a serious issue that will cost you if you intentionally try to hit someone like that.
Okay, here's a scenario that's actually every football parent's nightmare. Here's the deal. Your child is playing football and suffers a head injury, but doesn't tell you about it. You recognize that this kid is now having some problems dealing with life in every sense of the term, physically, mentally, emotionally. How does that parent get that child some help?
I think the first step is making sure you're going to the primary care physician, going to the doctor, making sure that they get a checkup and describing what happened, being very honest with the doctor as to what happened. That way they know the tests to do, they know the steps to take to see if that's really going to be an issue and what steps to go further from there.
Okay, Erin, let's go to the other side of the age spectrum for a little bit. Say a family member who notices an older family member is no longer caring about things he or she used to care about. Do you suppose that maybe a one-on-one talk between the two would help try to assess a situation, or is there more to that?
Definitely. It's a good way to get started, and it's a good way to see kind of where things could go from there. A lot of times people with mental illness, especially depression, you kind of just want to be left alone. You know, that's you're in your own state of sadness to the point where you cannot be talked out of it. And I think a lot of people think, including myself, that if I'm with someone that was depressed before I was educated about clinical depression, I would do the same thing. I would try to talk them out of it. Hey, let's talk about this. Let's go out and do this. Let's do this. Let's do this. But me pushing the person wasn't helping at all, when really what they needed was support. They needed an ear to listen. They needed the kind of push to go and find out what's going on and maybe go talk to someone professionally about it. So getting them to talk in the beginning and saying, hey, something going on, did you need to tell me something? That's a great way to start. But just knowing where the boundary is, not pushing it, knowing how to observe what's going on, but not kind of be down their throat about it all the time.
So NAMI can provide all the services to the person who recognizes the problems, but not necessarily be able to help the person who has the problems, especially if that person doesn't want the help. It's kind of like that old lead a horse to water but can't make him drink syndrome.
Absolutely. And unfortunately, that is really the part that we don't have an answer for. If people don't want help, if they refuse to take medication, if they refuse to go to the therapist, it's really their right to refuse that. Now, the way that NAMI teaches to kind of converse with people that are in that state is sympathy. So when you're talking to a person that's being very adamant about not taking drugs, or very adamant about even having at a level of psychosis, and they're seeing something and they're insisting that that's really what's happening. For instance, my family member sometimes would see signs and thinking it was directed at him. And he would come to me and say, this sign had my name all over it. They were talking to me. They were specifically talking to me. What NAMI teaches is to not say, no, you know, that's not right. Come on, you know, and reasoning with the person, because they're beyond that level by that point. They're at the level where they're very engrossed in what they're thinking. So instead, having the sympathy to say, that must be very difficult. You know, I can't imagine how that would feel. And not saying, I know how you feel, because you don't know how they feel. Saying something like, that must be so hard for you. What can I do to help? You know, leaving it open that way, that's going to get you much more response than trying to reason it out of them, trying to convince them differently.
The negative way to look at it is to say that's enabling, but the positive, proactive way to say is that's the only way you can actually help a person.
Absolutely. And again, with the stigma, that's the hardest part, is that a lot of our techniques are seen as enabling by society, because society teaches us that if you have someone in your family that is being adamant about something that you don't want them to do, then you are going to punish it out of them. You are going to talk it out of them. You are going to consequence it out of them. You're going to do all these steps. But, you know, that's really not the way to handle it. When someone is mentally ill, that's not how to treat them, because they have to be treated differently than other people in that realm. And I think that's the hardest thing as a family member to see. Again, I was angry a lot. I was thinking, why are you doing this? Why can't I make sure that you can do something like take out the trash, that you can vacuum the house, you can do these little things, when that's really not the case? They're really suffering, and being sympathetic is not enabling. At the same time, knowing what is enabling, if the person is coming to you and asking for money for drugs or alcohol or something that's really detriment to them, is doing something bad on top of having problems with mental illness, that might be enabling. You know, it's all a self-assessment, knowing where the line is of where I can help them, but making sure that I'm not helping them do something bad to themselves.
Erin, how can people get a hold of your free services through NAMI?
The NAMI office, again, is at 4615 Alameda. We have an office right in that front lobby area. The phone numbers that you can contact us at are 915-534-5478 or 915-534-5476. And again, we have volunteers in and out of the office all the time. So if no one's there to get your call, please, please leave us a message. We're very adamant about getting back to everyone that contacts us.
Well, thank you so much. Erin Pavolka has been our guest on El Paso Primetime, talking about the National Alliance on Mental Illness here in El Paso. Thanks for listening to El Paso Primetime. Louis Signs and Perspectives is next. Have a great weekend. We'll be right back.